Hello, this is indeed UUtah Phillips, the golden voice of the Great Southwest, and you are listening to Loafer's Glory, the hobo jungle of the mind. We blast the rock and move the dirt with heavy gloves and sweat-stained shirt. We drive the piles and pour cement, 100 miles of rebar bent. With crane and cable working high, we frame the steel against the sky. Wired, plumbed, walled, and glazed, the sidewalk supers stand amazed to see what skill and sweat have done, built by many, owned by one, who never bent or turned a spade, but takes what other hands have made. We act as though there's nothing wrong, we pack our tools and move along. But, just supposing some fine day, we all made up our minds to stay, and tell the owner now it's done, we'll let it work for everyone. Of course he's bound to take it hard, he'll call the cops and the National Guard. But if every worker in every trade took possession of what we've made, oh sure, the boss will scream and shout. But what'll he do if we all walk out? Yep, this is UUtah Phillips here at the studios of KVMR Community Radio, the voice of the mountains, here in the foothills of the Sierra, Nevada City, California. I'm here with Steve Baker, who's the engineer perpetually. That was the Borsdorf's Fine Music. I never get tired of introducing them to the world. The world ought to know them better. That poem at the beginning is called New Building, and I was looking around for a poem to begin a Labor Day show. And I decided, hell, I can write one just as well. So, yeah, I made that one up. Well, maybe not just as well, but I made that one up. Labor Day. I'm going to offer you songs old and new. You know, there's some talk going around down there in Los Angeles and then up at the WTO event in Washington State in Seattle and also in Washington, D.C. And I picked it up from young people around here. Now, of course, I get the queasy feeling that the first sure sign of age is when you begin to criticize youth. Nonetheless, there's been talk around among young people, we don't want to hear about that 60s stuff. That was your rebellion. That was your revolution. That was your movement. We've got our own movement now. We don't want to hear about that. Well, you know, when we were organizing in the 60s, we were saying the same things to those people that were in the 30s who were organizing unions and facing the machine guns at the Ford Motor Plant, you understand? We didn't pay any attention to them either. Now, look, the genius of capitalism is its ability to divide and conquer, to keep us constantly divided against ourselves. We've all got to get together on this. We're fighting the same struggle. We're fighting the same monstrous corporate machine. And we all have to understand that, young and old. I was talking to the Placerville High School students, it was called the Progressive Club, a while back, and I asked them some questions. They were rhetorical questions, of course. I'm not above that sort of thing. The question I asked them, and I was polling them, I asked them to put their hands up, I said, in terms of the decisions that affect your life day to day, what you wear, what you eat, what you live in, how you entertain yourself, how you transport yourself, and so on, who makes the greatest number of decisions, of those kinds of decisions, corporations or the government? Well, without hardly any hesitation, you know, the hands went up in favor of the corporations make those decisions. And I said, well, our corporation is represented by elected people. Well, I thought about it, and then the hands went up. No, they're not elected people. It said, our corporation is democratic institutions. Well, a little more thought about that, and then, of course, it dawned on them that, no, the corporations are not democratic institutions. And they said, well, and do most corporations try to keep union elections from happening, try to keep shop democracy off of the shop floor? Well, yes. Well, then, not only are corporations not democratic, they're anti-democratic. Well, then, that what comes down to is that the majority of decisions that affect your life from day to day are made by non-elected people representing anti-democratic organizations. Now, you think about that. You young people, you think about that. What are we going to do about that? Well, Pete Seeger had the answer and recorded it 50 years ago, and the answer is always the same. Thank you.
Now, if you want higher wages, let me tell you what to do. You got to talk to the workers in the shop with you. You got to build you a union, got to make it strong. But if you all stick together, boys, it won't be long. You get shorter hours, better working conditions, vacations with pay, take a kid to the seashore. It ain't quite this simple, so I better explain just why you got to ride on the union train. Cause if you wait for the boss to raise your pay, we'll all be awaiting till Judgment Day. We'll all be buried, gone to heaven. St. Peter will be the straw boss then. Now you know you're underpaid, but the boss says you ain't. He speeds up the work till you're about to faint. You may be down and out, but you ain't beaten. You can pass out a leaflet and call a meeting, talk it over, speak your mind, decide to do something about it. Cause the boss may persuade some poor damn fool to go to your meeting and act like a stool. But you can always tell a stool, oh, that's a fact. He's got a yaller streaker running down his back. He doesn't have to stool. He'll always get along on what he takes out of blind men's cups. You got a union now and you're sitting pretty. Put some of the boys on the steering committee. The boss won't listen when one guy squawks, cause he's got to listen when the union talks. He'd better be mighty lonely. Everybody decide to walk out on him. Suppose they're working you so hard it's just outrageous, and they're paying you all starvation wages. You go to the boss and the boss would yell, before I raise your pay, I'd see you all in hell. Well, he's puffing a big cigar, feeling mighty slick, cause he thinks he's got your union lick. Well, he looks out the window and what does he see but 1,000 pickets, and they all agree he's a bastard, unfair slave driver. Bet he beats his wife. Now, boys, you come to the hardest time. The boss will try to bust your picket line. He'll call out the police, the National Guard. They'll tell you it's a crime to have a union card. They'll raid your meeting. They'll hit you on the head. They'll call every one of you a damn red unpatriotic. Japanese spies. Sabotaging national defense. But out at Ford, here's what they found. And out at Vulti, here's what they found. And out at Alice Chalmers, here's what they found. And down at Bethlehem, here's what they found. That if you don't let red baiting break you up, and if you don't let stool pigeons break you up, and if you don't let vigilantes break you up, and if you don't let race hatred break you up, you'll win. What I mean, take it easy, but take it.
Pete Seeger. Oh, yeah, the answer doesn't change. Steve and I were just mentioning that Pete Seeger's banjo had been stolen and it was recovered. That was a matter for national news. Of interest to me is that Pete Seeger can't get on national news, but his banjo damn sure can. You figure it out. You said in there, if you don't let red baiting break you up. Well, of course, that was a real basic tactic during the late 40s and all through the 50s, all through the Cold War, was red baiting. That if you said anything progressive, you said anything that came out in favor of workers or workers' rights, you were just called a communist and dismissed or fired, you know, or worse. These days, the boss, well, the Cold War is supposed to be over. I guess red baiting is a little passe, but what about union baiting? Now, you know, young people really have to be taught in school. It has to come from somewhere, folks, that when they go out to get a job, when you young folks go out to get a job, you absolutely have the right to organize, and you have the right of collective bargaining. And don't let the boss, don't let anybody talk you out of that. It was fought for too hard by too many people. Union baiting. Well, I'll give you an idea of what that is, of how it's being used today. This was a struggle in Louisville over an American Express card company opening up. And this is Charlie King, and Are You Now or Have You Ever Been? See, back then, the phrase was used by House and American Activities Committees, Are You Now or Have You Ever Been a Member of the Communist Party? The loyalty oath. Here, Are You Now or Have You Ever Been? Charlie King.
I was listening to my radio, a news report from Louisville. American Express thought they might build a factory to make and track their credit cards. 2,000 jobs for honest and hard-working folk will never use the cards they make all day. But they wouldn't pick a city for their plant until they'd ask a question I recall from way back when. To head off conflict and subversion, they asked every working person, are you now or have you ever been? Are you now or have you ever been a member of a union? Are you now or have you ever been? Well, I never thought I'd see the day I'd hear those words come round again. Are you now or have you ever been? Hard at work but soft on unions, that's the average Louisvillian, American expressly stated in their press release. The site selection test committee recommends some other city where business rolls in profits and the unions rest in peace. And every day that question grows a little more familiar as another union battle flag descends. Ask any airline traffic tracker, Bill Wright, Miner, or Meatpacker, are you now or have you ever been?
Are you now or have you ever been
a member of a union? Did your father, mother, sister, brother wear a union pin? Well, I never thought I'd see the day I'd hear those words come round again. Are you now or have you ever been? Corporate planners dutifully bought the folks of Louisville a one-way nowhere fare on the American Express. Will we leave the driving to the bosses, make concessions, take the losses? This union's got the disappearing railroad blues unless we dare to use the power we've been sitting on for years. We are strong enough to call their bluff, my friends. They can take their lousy plant and shove it. Yes, I'm union, damn proud of it. I am now, and I have always been.
Are you now or have you ever been a member of the union with your sisters and your brothers? Will you struggle to be free? When the question comes around, will you stand in solidarity? I am now and I will always be.
Are you now or have you ever been a member of a union? Are you now or have you ever been?
Well, now, there's a writer, there's a powerful voice, there's somebody that I deeply, deeply love, and he has motivated more young singer-songwriters into writing songs about social issues than any person on the planet that I know of. I admire him a great deal. You know, these Labor Days come along, and I feel inclined to rant. There's things that go on all year. Sometimes I put them into programs, sometimes I'm doing something about cowboys or whatever, but this is my ranting season, so you just have to pardon me. I don't have to pardon myself. I enjoy ranting. Well, look, let's try a rant along. You folks there at home or wherever you happen to be, I find that the current political debate is grounded in some pretty absurd assumptions, and until we challenge those assumptions, we're not going to get much of anywhere. There's probably about 30 of them. I've got maybe 5 of them in my head here that I think are particularly important. Now, I'll tell you what the assumption is, and it's just a rude assumption. I think they're all easily refutable. But if you agree with me, then you just yell, rubbish. That's my favorite epithet, rubbish. All right. Assumption number one, capitalist institutions are democratic. Rubbish. What is this talk in Eastern Europe about democratic capitalism or capitalist democracy? That's rubbish. 2, classes defined by income level. Rubbish. class is not defined by income level. That's sloppy thinking, isn't it? I mean, who decides where that slides to? Class is defined by your relationship to the means of production. If you don't own your tools, if you don't own the office you work in, if you don't own the workplace, if all you're doing is selling your labor energy, and you get to get a boss and get a paycheck, you're in the working class. And that's already been decided a long time ago. It doesn't matter whether you're a college professor or a ditch digger, you're in the working class and better be proud of it. Number three, private interest supersedes public interest in all instances. Rubbish. There's an attack on the civic. If capitalism has its way, there won't be any civic anymore. Everything will have to be owned and make money for somebody or it simply won't exist. Rubbish. Four, and this is important. Education is defined as employability. Every national debate I've heard about education has defined education as employability. Why not build trade schools if that's what it is? No, education is learning enough about enough things that you can make creative and informed decisions about what you're going to do with your life, what you're going to do with your labor education. That's education. Five, the free press is free. Rubbish! The press has a boss, and when you have a boss, you're not free. That's that for that. And six, in my case, particularly right now, wellness and the profit system work together. Well, that is indeed rubbish. The medicine is not for sale. If it's for sale, it's not the medicine. All right, ran along. Malvina Reynolds, we just celebrated her 100th birthday down in Berkeley. Malvina wrote so many good songs, What Have They Done to the Rain? Just song after song, she wrote all of her life and wrote beautifully. We're going to listen to one of Malvina's, my favorite of Malvina's song, sung by Faith Petrick, who is just about to turn 85 and is still touring and still singing. Here's Malvina Reynolds, The Little Red Hen.
Little Red Hen found a grain of wheat, said, "This looks good enough to eat, but I'll plant it instead, make me some bread." Said to the other folks down the street, "Who will help me plant this wheat?" "Not I," said the dog and the cat. "Not I," said the mouse and the rat. "I will then," said the little red hen, and she did. The sun shone bright, the rain it blew, the grain of wheat it grew and grew, began to sprout, headed out till it was ripe enough. "Who will help me harvest this stuff?" "Not I," said the dog and the cat. "Not I," said the mouse and the rat. "I will then," said the little red hen, and she did. She lugged it to the miller to grind to flour, 'cause the others would offer her no manpower. At baking time they all declined to help her with the job. They were a doggone no good mob. "Not I," said the dog and the cat. "Not I," said the mouse and the rat. "I will then," said the little red hen, and she did. Bread looked good and smelled so fine, the gang came running and fell in line. "We'll do our part with all our heart to help you eat this chow," she said. "I do not need you now. I planted and hoed this grain of wheat. Them that work not shall not eat. That's my cradle," the little bird said, and that's why they called her Red.
Faith Petrick, still churning along at the age of 85. We're going to be going down and celebrating her birthday, singing along with her there at the Freight and Salvage here, I guess on the 13th of September. I look forward to that a lot. You know, when I was a kid back there in Cleveland, Ohio, my father worked, and my mother, her job was raising us kids and keeping the household under control. Now, I know that's an archaic model and that everybody deserves to go out and make a career for themselves and equal pay for equal work. But that's not the point I'm trying to make. The point I'm trying to make is that with one person working, we were able to afford a little house. In fact, so was the mailman, so was the garbage collector. Everybody was able to afford a little house. The boss wanted 40 hours a week, 45 with overtime. And we made it. Now, two people working, 90 hours a week with overtime. A mother and a father working, a lot of latchkey kids. The boss wants 90 hours a week, and we're still just making it. Well, now, what's wrong here? There's something terribly wrong here. And every time we talk about they bring up the breakup of the family, the erosion of family, of traditional family values, they blame it over on the government. They say the government's responsible for this. Well, no, capitalism is responsible for it by demanding that much work and not enough compensation. But because it owns the mass media, capitalism has immunized itself from criticism. Think about it. Well, here, let's listen to a new voice, a voice that's new to me, David Rovix. It writes many, many good songs. He's been sending me his music, and I've enjoyed listening to it. Well, let's listen to one of his, The Minimum Wage Strike.
When I awoke one morning, there was a feeling in the air. Everything was quiet. Things are different everywhere. The Wobblies were back again with Joe Hill at the mic. When all the minimum wage workers went on strike, there was no one pumping gasoline, no one driving from town to town, no one at the registers. All the highways were shut down. The cars were stuck in the garage, CEOs on bikes, when all the minimum wage workers went on strike. There was no one flipping burgers. All the grills were cold. Onion rings were in their bags. Fries were growing mold. There were no baristas at Starbucks asking how many shots would you like, when all the minimum wage workers went on strike. The fruit was falling off the trees, no one to load the truck. Corn was rotting on the stalks, no farmhands to shuck. The workfare workers were hanging at home, spending the day with their tykes, when all the minimum wage workers went on strike. Yuppie parents were housebound, their nannies left the job. Walmart workers said enough of our labor has been robbed. The footlocker was locked up, boss had to take a hike, when all the minimum wage workers went on strike. When I awoke one morning, there was a feeling in the air. Everything was quiet, things were different everywhere. The Wobblies were back again with T-Bone at the mic, when all the minimum wage workers went on strike.
Well, Well, bravo, David. Yeah, David Rovix. That's a dream song, isn't it? That's a dream song, and that's one of the things we're working for in the labor movement, is to make those kinds of dreams come true. Minimum wage worker. Let's look down that long tunnel of time again. Sarah Ogan Gunning was born in Ely Branch, Kentucky in 1910. She wrote songs. Her sister was Aunt Molly Jackson, who was famous for writing songs in the great coal troubles of those times. Her brother was Jim Garland, who wrote The Death of Harry Sims about the assassination of a young organizer who had come down to help them from the North. This particular song of Sarah Ogan Gunning is called Down on the Picket Line. It stems from the 1932 National Mine Union strike. The NMU was an alternative to the United Mine Workers of America. It was much, much further to the left. The National Miners Union strike on the left fork of Straight Creek, Bell County, Kentucky. That's where the miners and their wives walked the Coal Camp Railroad picket line. Now, this, Down on the Picket Line, was Sarah Ogan Gunning's first song as a young woman.
Come on, friends, and let's go down, let's go down, let's go down. Come on, friends, and let's go down, down on the picket line. Yes, we went down on the picket line to keep the scabs out of the mine. Who's going to win the strike? Come on, and we'll show you the way. We went out one morning before daylight, and I was sure we'd have a fight. But the scabs was cowardly, ran away, but we went back the very next day. Come on, friends, and let's go down, let's go down, let's go down. Come on, friends, and let's go down, down on the picket line. As we went down on the picket line to keep the scabs out of the mine. Who's going to win the fight? Come on, and we'll show you the way. We all went out on the railroad track to meet them scabs and turn them back. We win that strike, I'm glad to say. Come on, and we'll show you the way.
Again, that was Blind Kenny Hall, and of course Jody Steckert accompanying him on the guitar. I've always wanted to mention that he's one of the finest musicians I know. Well, let's walk back up that tunnel of time here from Sarah Ogan Gunning. I regarded her as a good friend. She has passed along, as has Jim Garland, her brother. I knew both of them. But today, are those songs still being written today? Is that spirit still being maintained today? Well, I think from David Rovix and Charlie King, people like that, you know that they still are. Now, Ann Feeney. Ann Feeney is one of the most powerful voices in the labor movement. She's from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Now, for the past 10 or 15 years, she's been in every struggle on every picket line across the United States. She just shows up like magic everywhere and really does the work. A fine song maker. Let's listen to her. It was a Staley's soybean strike, the Staley's strike down in Decatur, Illinois. She was there working on that picket line. She wrote a song down there called War on the Workers, which she sang to that crowd. Well, let's let her introduce it.
I couldn't really close out tonight without singing this song that has come to mean so much to me, because I have seen courage and idealism and everything. You know, when they give you all this talk in school about what this country's supposed to be, about caring for each other and standing up for each other and one out of many and working together and liberty and justice for all, we know that our history has not served those ideals very well. But in Decatur, Illinois, that liturgy is being borne witness to every day by some of the most courageous, exciting, wonderful workers that it's been my privilege to know, and that is the workers at the A.E. Staley plant. If you've all been to Decatur, like you said, you've heard it already. Deadly corn, it's a war zone here today, right in the heartland. But our union's here to stay. These multinational bastards don't use tanks and guns, it's true. But they've declared a war on us. Fight back, it's up to you all. There's a war on the workers.
There's a war on the
workers.
There's a war on the workers.
There's a war on the workers. And it's time we started calling the shots. Deadly corn could be the death of you and me. We're not unarmed. Our weapon's solidarity. Each workday's been a battle in the toxics and the smell. It was bad enough with Staley, but with Tate and Lyle, it's hell. Oh, there's a war on the workers.
It's a war on the workers.
It's a war on the workers.
It's a war on the workers.
Oh, it's a war on the workers. And it's time we started calling the shots. Deadly corn. Workplace safety's just a joke. There's the dust, the BSS, asbestos, fire and smoke. Jim Beals was murdered outright, poisoned by P.O. But Tate and Lyle's philosophy is die quickly or die slow. It's a war on the workers.
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 And it's time we started calling the shots. They can lock us out, they can lock us out. We will not give in. No more lies, no compromise. We'll battle till we win. Oh, it's a war on the workers.
It's a war on the workers.
Oh, it's a war on the workers.
It's a war on the workers.
It's a war on the workers. Don't you know that it's a war on the workers?
It's a war on.
Best believe that it's a war on the workers.
It's a war on the workers.
Oh, it's a war on the workers. They might call it team concept. It's a war on the workers. Or it's a war on the workers. They might ask for copay. But you know what I say?
It's a war on the workers.
They call for privatization.
It's a war on the workers.
And cooperation.
It's a war on the workers.
It's a war on the workers. It's a war at the Frontier Casino. It's a war at Firestone here in Decatur. It's a war at the A.E. Staley plant. Thanks to GATT and NAFTA, it's a worldwide war. Oh, it's a war on the workers. Decatur, Illinois, it's time around this world. You know it's time we started calling the shots.
Well, Ann Feeney, an old friend, I hope you all have a chance to listen to Ann and watch her work, especially in those struggles, of which you too can become very much a part. Wesley Everest. That war on the workers has been going on a long time, you know. Wesley Everest came back home from the First World War. Went to work in the forest down there around Chehalis, Centralia, Washington. That was organized by the Industrial Workers of the World, the IWW, the Wobblies. It was 1919. Well, of course, the owners, the operators, were trying desperately to drive the Union out of the forest through terrorism, through vigilante action. Wesley Everest was at the Union Hall. They heard there was going to be trouble. It was an Armistice Day parade. He was down there at the Union Hall to protect it, the Wobbly Hall. Yeah, and the parade came by a prearranged signal. The American Legion turned and charged the Union Hall. Wesley Everest stayed to protect it as everybody beat it out the back. Well, they chased Wesley down to the river. They got him, threw him in jail. That night, again by prearrangement, all of the lights in the town went out. The jail was broken into. There was nobody to stop the vigilantes. Wesley Everett was taken out, mutilated, and then hanged. Here's a song about that. I swear this song probably hasn't been sung in 70 years. You know, it comes from the Little Red Songbook of the IWW, where it just says, sung to the tune of. And we'd never known what those tunes were. Those tunes just vanished. Fellow worker Al Grierson, who lives in an old bus down there in Luckenbach, Texas, he took the time and trouble to track down all those tunes. And he's the only one living I know of who can still sing those songs. I asked him to sit at his little recorder there on the bus and send me this field recording of the song about Wesley Everest from the Little Red Songbook, The Tragedy of Sunset Land.
There's a little western city in the shadow of the hills, where sleeps a brave young rebel neath the dew. Now he's free from life's long struggle, his name is with us still. We know that he was fearless, tried and true. In a homely pine board coffin, our warrior lies at rest. Those henchmen turned loose on him one day. These parting words were spoken, boys, I did my best. Where the old Chehalis River flows its way. Now the moonbeams in the dell linger there in sad farewell, in memory of that fateful autumn day. And someday we're coming home in the sunset land to roam, where the old Chehalis River flows its way. Oh, the monarchs of the forest were secure in their regime when they took brave Wesley Everest's life away. His name will be a memory in the workers' high esteem, where the old Chehalis River flows its way. When the sunlight floods the hilltops and the birds will sing once more, in that valley we will settle down to stay. There to organize the workers on that lonely woodland shore, where the old Chehalis River flows its way. Now the moonbeams in the dell linger there in sad farewell, in memory of that fateful autumn day. And someday we're coming home in the sunset land to roam, where the old Chehalis River flows its way.
Oh, my. Yeah, fellow worker Al Grierson down in Luckenbach, Texas, sitting there in his school bus. That's that. The cast of that tune is as a music hall tune, a vaudeville tune, and it's sung that way. That's Al sings that song pretty much the way you would have heard it sung 70 or 80 years ago. I love doing field recordings, by the way. I know that the field recordings that I play are not up to anybody's engineering standards, but I don't care for engineering standards. Technology is not the answer. Technology was never the answer. Let's roll it up to today here. An old friend of mine I finally ran into again after a lapse of some years, Mike Marker up in Bellingham, Washington. Well, he's from down around in that country, and he's real familiar with it around where the Chehalis and Centralia are. He sat down at a recorder a while back with Larry Hanks, and it's not a sequel to The Tragedy of Sunset Land. It's sort of an updating of it. Well, I'll let Mike Marker describe this song to you.
I thought I'd send you along another song that I made up. And this is one that came from Alaska, where some folks were asking me if I would write a kind of a nature song about saving a national forest for a park and banning clear cutting there. And I just couldn't do it. You know, some people from the public radio station wanted me to come up with a song that they could use. And I just couldn't write that kind of a song somehow. You know, I've always tried to write songs from the perspective of working people and the sort of environmentalist or nature-loving, tree-hugging kind of song. I just couldn't do it. And so it didn't come to me, and I dropped the project for a while. And then I was playing for some towns in Alaska and playing in Ketchikan and Craig and in southeast Alaska. I did a little tour there. And some of the folks that came to see me were from logging families, old logging families, and you know, I grew up around people like that, and so I knew them well, and we talked, and they shared their concerns with me. They said, "We don't like what we have to do here, and you know, we're concerned about the forest too, but we need jobs. What are we to do? What are we supposed to do here?" And I struggled with it for a while, and then late one night, it kind of came to me that, you know, there's still plenty of jobs for all kinds of people doing all kinds of things. It's the way the jobs are done and who controls the conditions of the labor that's the problem. So it's a thing that needs to be changed. And I came up with this song. And you know, this is a recording. Larry and I sat in front of a tape recorder one time just to get the song down. So this is Larry Hanks and I. Playing the logger's song.
That was a long time ago. I'd get laid off in the winter, but then in the summertime I'd go working in the woods and driving the big machines. They said we were harvesting the timber, but I swear to God I still don't know what that means. Cause a harvest comes from working the land and loving it, not from making a war on somebody's home. Well, I used to be a logger, and I had to leave that alone. I have seen my share of destruction, thousand mangled clear-cut hills, and I never thought too much about the black bear, or all the fish and the birds that I helped to kill. But a harvest comes from working the land and loving it, and not from making a war on somebody's home. Well, I used to be a logger, and I had to leave that alone. All the timber corporation, they got a chokehold on the land, cutting down the old growth forest, and they ship it to Japan. But a harvest comes from a working the land and loving it, and not from making a war on somebody's home. Well, I used to be a logger, had to leave that alone. I'm hard up for employment, and I don't know what I'll do. I got a young and growing family, and the rent is coming due. There's jobs for every logger in this country. If only we could learn to change the plan. Well, I used to be a logger, but now you understand that a harvest comes from working the land and loving it, and not from making a war on somebody's home. Well, I used to be a logger, and I had to leave that alone.
Isn't that a lovely song? I'm so glad I ran on to Mike Marker again. I have missed him. He's certainly a great over-the-road traveler and a man of a very specific conscience. Well, I guess it's time for the old guy's annual Labor Day speech, after which you will hear another field recording, the Sacramento Labor Chorus, including some members of the State Employees Association. This is music from the grassroots. Labor Day address, and then we are building a strong union, Sacramento Labor Chorus. You know, the academics and the economists have tried to define the working class out of existence. You know, there's no more working class, which means there's no more class struggle, which means there's no more class warfare. Well, that's balderdash. That is simply isn't true. If you're working for wages and got a boss, you're in the working class, and that struggle goes on and on to be able to care for your kids, to be able to live any kind of decent human life. The working class. When I turn my faucet, water comes out. When I flush my toilet, the poop goes away. When I go to my mailbox, the mail is sitting there. When I throw the switch, the lights go on. Eh? Work is being done. I can't do any of those things. I don't know how. And I haven't got the time or the skill to learn. All of those things. The garbage truck shows up. The garbage goes away. I would sink in my own filth, my own waste, if somebody didn't do that work. Huh? And we honor that. That's what we do on Labor Day. We honor that. We honor the work of all the people that make our lives livable. You know? All the things that you can't do for yourself have to be done for somebody else. Now, you want to make sure that the people who do that work, essential to your life, the quality of your life, are adequately compensated for that work, better than adequately compensated. that they're well housed, that there's strong safety regulations so they don't get injured or sick on their job. They don't have to worry or fret about a kid having to go to a hospital or a long illness, you see. And when they get too old to do that kind of work anymore, that there's enough money there for them to have a dignified and a delightful retirement. Now, that's a selfish thing, you know. I want those things to be done as well as possible, and they can't be unless the people who do that work are happy, all right? And when I look out my window and see my garbage man come by, I realize that he contributes more to my quality of life than I do to his. Next time your garbage man comes, run out and ask for his autograph, okay?
We are building a strong
lutte finale, groupons-nous et demain, l'international sera le champ humain. Arise, ye prisoners of starvation, arise, ye wretched of the earth. For justice thunders condemnation, a better world's in birth. No more tradition's chains shall bind us. Arise, ye slaves, all foreign thrall. The earth shall rise on new foundations. We have been not, we shall be all. It's the final conflict. Let each stand in place. The international shall be
human race. It's the final conflict. Let each stand and place the international shopping.
Well, that, yes, this has been you, Utah Phillips, the golden voice of the great Southwest, and you have in fact been listening to Loafer's Glory, the hobo jungle of the mind. Have a wonderful Labor Day, and if you're listening to this after Labor Day, well, every day is Labor Day anyway. Joe Hill. If the workers take a notion, they can stop all speeding trains. Every ship upon the ocean, they can tie with mighty chains. Every wheel in the creation, every mine and every mill, fleets and armies of the nation will, at their command, stand still.